Oh, Gronkowski with a cheap shot. That's terrible. White was clearly down and out of bounds, and Gronk just drilled him in the back. That should be an ejection.
That's an ejection. That should be an ejection.
Well, what to make of that hit? Does Gronk deserve a fine, a suspension? One game, maybe two? I'm Chad Finn, sports media and online columnist at the Boston Globe, filling in for Chris Gasper. It's Monday, December 4th, and this is Season Ticket. The Patriots won Sunday, beating the Buffalo Bills 23-3 in Buffalo, but it was an ugly game at times, no more so than in the final 5 minutes when Patriots tight end Rob Gronkowski was flagged for a late hit on a Buffalo Bills player that may end up costing him a suspension or a fine. Joining me now is the Globe's NFL writer, Ben Volen. Ben, I'll ask you, what's going to happen with Gronk?
Well, it's time to rub the crystal ball here, Chad, and we should know pretty soon. These decisions are going to be reviewed on Monday, and they typically come down mid-Monday afternoon around 4 o'clock maybe, so it should be pretty soon. And the more I think about it, I think Rob Gronkowski is looking at a one-game suspension. My initial gut reaction yesterday was that this was an isolated incident for Gronk. He certainly does not have a history of dirty play or cheap shots or anything like that, has really never gotten in trouble with the league. However, this was a pretty egregious play, flying forearm to the back of a guy's head. And I think what's really going to work against him, Chad, is the fact that it did involve a hit to the head. It did involve sending White to the concussion protocol. Obviously, that's a huge hot-button issue for the league right now. I think they have to prove that they're tough on cheap hits and they are big on player safety. So I think Rob Gronkowski is looking at a one-game suspension. He can appeal it. He gets 3 days to appeal. They would hear it this week. But I am not counting on him actually playing next Monday night in Miami.
Now, we should note we record this in the morning, and it's possible the league will make some sort of announcement about Gronk this afternoon, as you noted. Nature of podcasting is we kind of got to guess at when it might happen here. But I think we're in agreement that something is going to happen with Gronkowski where there is a punishment.
At minimum, a fine. Just for drawing the unnecessary roughness penalty, I think it's a $24,309 fine. And those amounts are very exact because it's all spelled out in the CBA. It's a percentage and an equation and all that fun stuff. But yeah, I mean, the decision might come out relatively soon after this podcast is published, so we might look great or we might look a little foolish, but I think certainly there's going to be a punishment, and I would not be surprised at all to see a one-game suspension. I think it's clearly warranted here.
Now, Gronk did apologize after the game.
I was just really frustrated at that moment. It just happened naturally through emotions and frustration, and just want to apologize to Tre'Davious White.
Is that going to get him any leeway with the league? I know they can get sanctimonious about this sort of thing, particularly with head injuries, but do they look at this and say, okay, he recognized he did something wrong, he was contrite, let's go a little bit easier on him than maybe Roger Goodell and his people were initially thinking?
I can't imagine it's going to help him, because if that's all it takes to not get suspended, I mean, you're going to see cheap shots all over the field, and all you have to do is go into the locker room later and say, I'm sorry.
But you got to seem sincere.
Right.
That's the key.
And I'm not sure he did, because while he's apologizing, he's also offering excuses.
I felt like it was a big hole at the top, and then the throw was definitely, I mean, I feel like it kind of pushed me a little bit. I mean, and made the play, and I just don't understand why there wasn't a flag. And just through that, and there's a couple times in the game, and they're calling me for the craziest stuff ever. And it's like crazy. I mean, like, what am I supposed to do? And then they don't call that? I mean,
you know, clearly he's frustrated. He thinks that the calls don't go both ways. He got called for 4 penalties yesterday. Offensive pass interference is obviously a big hot button issue for him, and he felt he was getting clutched and dragged and held all day. And I think you see it on that play. Trey White before the interception is just holding on to Gronk all play. So clearly his frustrations boiled over and got the best of him. But that's not an excuse, and even if you're contrite, and frankly, it shows a little bit of premeditation when he says how frustrated he was and in his admission there. So it was nice of Gronk to say that, but at the end of the day, he still sent the guy into the concussion protocol, still way out of line. So I think even though he apologized, Gronk's probably going to be taking a seat this week.
Is it a valid beef on his account that he does get manhandled all the time, but this is, what, year 8 of his career? He should be pretty used to it by now. What was it about yesterday's game that made the fuse light and then finally go off with him?
Yeah, I would say it's probably because he was called for offensive pass interference, and then he felt
that was ticky-tack, too. The defensive back didn't even move.
Exactly. So, you know, Gronk's bigger than the defenders, and a slight brush of the elbow, sometimes, especially when a guy's running backwards, his momentum will carry him, and it looks more egregious, you know, to the naked eye maybe than it did in reality on instant replay. So I think just the frustration of it, the calls went for him, not against the Bills. But I can't sit here and say Gronk's beef is valid either, because I don't sit here and watch every game and, you know, do we really tally up the times when it should have gone against him or it shouldn't have, and how do the I feel like for as often as Gronk gets called, he probably gets away with more than a few offensive pass interferences, too.
So you think it's all equal, more or less?
I think it comes out in the wash. And I think, you know, even if you're not getting the calls on a single day or whatever, like, you got to try to keep your cool. And no matter what, you can't throw a flying forearm to the back of a guy's head when he's not looking and he's on the ground. Like, obviously, can't do that.
Well, that's his wrestling roots with his brother probably watching WWE.
Going through those tables in Buffalo.
Right. His upbringing. Watching yesterday's game was relatively dull compared to most Patriots games. Brady didn't throw a touchdown pass. They didn't have a touchdown in the first half. But one of the things that we saw we don't usually see is we got angry Gronk. We also got angry Tom Brady yelling at Josh McDaniels on the sideline after, I think everybody, including Brady, is in agreement. He missed a throw to Brandon Cooks. Here's CBS announcer Tony Romo describing what happened.
Yeah, you're going to see Josh is like, you had the end cut. He was open. And Tom's like, you know what? I know he was open. You know what? I know he was open. I know it.
Brady admitted it. Like, you know, it's football, and sometimes you get a little overheated, and I don't think it's going to affect his relationship with Josh. And sometimes the people you love at the most, they drive you the craziest too. So, sometimes you scream your head off at your family members. But it was a frustrating day. The offensive line, you know, they were so great in run blocking, but they struggled in pass protection. And Brady took those three sacks in the first half, didn't have a ton of time. Joe Tooney and Nate Solder on the left side really seemed to have some struggles with the Bills. And, you know, the wide receivers were non-existent yesterday. Brandon Cooks only had two catches. He barely made a dent. Danny Amendola had two for 34. You know, thankfully Gronk to the rescue, but it was really about the running game. And even though it was a pedestrian game for Brady, even though the passing game struggled, it's great that they still won by 20 on the road and they established the run game. And you can't win
second week in a row with that.
Second week in a row that they've rushed for 190 yards, and it's only the second time in the entire 18 years of Belichick that they've done that. So obviously they got the ground game going, and you're going to need that kind of balance in the playoffs when the weather is obviously much more inclement. And if they're taking away Tom Brady, you still need to be able to move the football. So I thought that was a real positive sign yesterday.
Yeah, there was a lot going on with that offense yesterday. You mentioned the receivers weren't terribly involved. That probably directly correlates with Brady getting hit so much. He was sacked three times in the first half, hurried seven times, knocked down six. This is 2 weeks in a row where he's really taken some lumps. The Dolphins, Sue and Alonzo in particular last week, really got some shots in on him. Do we need to start worrying about this with the not just the performance of the offensive line, but the wear and tear on Brady as the season goes on?
What's interesting, though, is you mentioned those numbers. I feel like they fixed it in the second half. He didn't take a sack in the second half.
Yeah, he threw to Gronk as soon as he could.
Right, and they handed the ball off a lot, obviously. So I don't have all the hurry numbers and pressure stats for the second half, but the offensive line did seem to fix it. I mean, obviously, Brady's 40 years old, and he's already dealing with an Achilles injury, and he's been taking hits and sacks, and they're going to accumulate even more. And Alex Guerrero can, you know, rub all his magic voodoo as much as he wants all over Brady, but he's still going to be feeling those hits. But nothing's going to prevent him from playing. We all know he's not coming out of the game. I just think these teams have been daring the Patriots to run, and they've gladly done it. And if you want to allow us to hand the ball off to Deion Lewis and Rex Burkhead, those are two of our most dynamic and consistent offensive players right now. So I think I'm still not too worried about them long term. I mean, they've won eight in a row, and they've shown pretty good balance on offense right now.
Now, trending into December here, the Patriots habitually play their best football of the season as we get deeper into the schedule. It seems like they're doing it again. Is the running game going to continue to be a bigger part of things as they head toward the postseason? Is this something that they're going to rely on more? And in particular, Deion Lewis looks like the guy that he was before the knee injury, with not just the explosiveness, but he had a Walter Payton-like stiff arm on his 44-yard run yesterday.
Lewis, open room, and he breaks it into the secondary. Poyer tries to shove him out. Somehow he got away. And finally, inside the 10, Lewis's long dash comes to an end.
He looks like probably their third most important offensive player after Brady and Gronkowski.
Yeah, and you might even argue that he's a little more important than Gronk even. I mean, Deion Lewis is such a central figure of this offense right now. That stiff arm you mentioned was great on a 44-yard run, setting a new career high. You know, we've seen it over the last 2 months now. He's got those incredible moves where he can shake a guy and make him miss. But then he has surprising power to be able to run through the middle. And last week he had his first career 100-yard game. This week he was right on pace for it, and they kind of petered it out at the end. He still had 15 carries for 92 yards. I mean, 6 yards a carry is phenomenal. And then Rex Burkhead on top of it, 12 for 78. That's a 6.5-yard average. Two tough touchdown runs. The Patriots' offense is going to be whatever the defense is giving them. If they're going to stack the box, then Brady's going to go all day to Gronkowski and Cooks. But if they're playing back and giving you the underneath in the running game, the Patriots have proven that they can still dominate a football team that way. They could, even yesterday when it was a frustrating day for the offense, they still rack up over 400 yards and win by 20 points.
That's what constitutes a bad day for the Patriots.
It's amazing.
It's quite a standard this Patriots offense has set this year. We'll have much more to talk about that Patriots offense with Ben Volen in just a minute. Welcome back. If you like Season Ticket, be sure to subscribe. Back now with Ben Volen. Ben, we spend all our time talking about the offense, and we could go on even more, a story on each running back. But we got to give some credit to this defense. It's constantly overlooked, and yet they're on a pretty good run here in terms of shutting down opponent after opponent each weekend.
It's been a remarkable turnaround for the defense. We all know how poorly they played in the first four games of the season. They were ranked number 32 in total defense for the entire season until last week. They finally got to number 30, but obviously it's points allowed that really mattered, and they were 11th entering this game against the Bills, and they're going to shoot up a lot higher, obviously, after allowing just three. But it's been an incredible streak, this eight-game winning streak. Not once have they allowed more than 17 points, and the Patriots came up with a stat that since 2010, only four teams have produced a streak of eight games or longer of holding teams under 17 or something like that, and the Chiefs have the record at 9, so it's just been a phenomenal run. Now, you could sit here and maybe go line by line through the schedule, and they haven't exactly played a murderer's row.
Opposing quarterback by opposing quarterback might be the way to do it.
Now, they did play Matt Ryan and Phillip Rivers, so they, you know, it hasn't been all tomato cans, to use a Shaughnessy term. both those games, of course, were in Foxborough, but the schedule has not been as difficult as it could be, but no one's is. I mean, you look at the Eagles, they're 10-2, and last night was probably the first game they played against a real team, and they got handled pretty well by Seattle. So this defense has been just a phenomenal turnaround. The Bills' longest passing play yesterday was 14 yards, and that's where you've seen the biggest turnaround, Chad, is just the big plays, and you don't obviously see those coverage breakdowns anymore, but they've really clamped down, and when the other team is completing a pass, they swarm to the ball, and they've been making the tackle.
Yeah, their leading receiver, I think it was rookie Zay Jones, had 23 yards, so the receivers are absolute non-factor for the Bills. Part of that's the quarterback play as well. A couple of ex-Bills played significant roles for the Patriots. I'll ask you quickly about Stephon Gilmore, because he's somebody who was very maligned early in the season. They had major communication issues in their defensive backfield, and he was being the new and expensive guy. The finger was pointed at him, then he was out for a while with a concussion. Since he's come back, he looks like the guy they're paying for, and it looked like a lot of people thought after the game, I think Devin McCourty mentioned this, that the Bills were targeting him, and he didn't bend. He consistently played a great game. What, is this guy what they thought they were getting now?
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head at the Buffalo game. Gilmore even mentioned that, boy, the Bills really made a point to try to score a touchdown on him, and to his credit, he made the play every time. He had a couple of fantastic pass breakups in the fourth quarter there in the end zone. Game's already out of hand, but obviously pride is still a huge factor, and he made the play. So he's certainly playing a lot more like the player they envisioned. You know, that big physical corner can match up one-on-one. He handled Michael Crabtree really well and Demaryius Thomas in recent weeks.
Mike Evans even before he was
Mike
hurt.
Evans, he had a great game against Mike Evans. But him and McCourty and Malcolm Butler, Jonathan Jones, Daron Harmon, they're like all on the same page now. And, you know, you knew with the Patriots defense that it was very correctable. They needed a little fire lit under their butts, maybe, but they're there right now. And, you know, with this secondary, obviously the front seven's a little weak right now with some injuries, but, you know, with the guys they have back there in the secondary, they're really carrying the team right now.
Yeah, that probably is the strength of their defense. I don't think it's any major surprise that Gilmore played well. He's an accomplished, well-compensated football player. The bigger surprise among the ex-Bills on the Patriots is Eric Lee, who had an interception. Game might have been different if Buffalo scored on that first possession. He had the interception at the one-yard line that stalled out their first drive.
First and goal, Taylor. Time, throws, picked off. Dreadful throw, and is picked off by his former practice squad teammate.
Also had a sack and a half. Looks like another one of those guys that the Patriots habitually bring in the middle of a season, and they end up contributing. It seems like Kyle Van Noy last year. Who is this guy, and why didn't the Buffalo Bills keep him on their roster?
I was going to say, I think the appropriate response is, who? Eric Lee? Like, no, none of us had ever heard of him 2 weeks ago. And then classic Patriots, they pluck him off the Bills practice squad. They then use him against the Bills, and he has a huge game. His first career interception, 1.5 sacks. They've really needed him to play on the defensive line at that edge spot. Obviously, Hightower's down. Kyle Van Noy's been limping pretty badly the last couple weeks. He tried to play yesterday, only played 15 snaps. They just needed a warm body on the edge, and they plucked Eric Lee off the practice squad of the Bills. He's a guy that was actually in camp with the Houston Texans, so the Patriots got a close look at him during those joint practices, and that's classic Patriots as well. They use those random practices in August to scout the players 60 to 90 on the Houston Texans team, and they end up finding a guy who contributes, and he played a lot yesterday. I think 55 of the 70 snaps or so. So classic Patriots finding a random guy to fill in and do well, and great job by Matt Patricia getting Eric Lee into the right positions, and great job by Eric Lee coming through for his new team.
All right, so we've covered offense and defense. Bill Belichick loves to talk about all three phases. I don't know if he considers all three of them equal, but he talks about them like they're equal, and they certainly give more credence to special teams than most teams. So I want to ask you about Stephen Gostkowski, kind of the quiet, I hate using the word hero, but in football terms, quiet hero in the first half of the game. Three field goals. Got them something while the offense was stagnating.
50 yards for Gostkowski. And the kick, no problem.
Wow, he made that look easy. It's windy here, too. That was impressive.
You look at this guy, and a couple years down the road, if he keeps playing at this level, he's going to be one of the top scorers in NFL history. Are we underestimating what Stephen Gostkowski is? Because it seems like every time he misses a kick, you start saying maybe they should bring in another kicker to take a look at. And meanwhile, he's 10 years even more so into his career and still going strong.
Yeah, I think he's been here longer than Vinatieri.
He has, yeah.
He's passed him on the scoring list, obviously. You know, the thing about Gostkowski, he doesn't have that seminal moment. You know, he doesn't have the snow game like Vinatieri or the Super Bowl kicks. He doesn't have that one memorable kick. I mean, maybe the 62-yarder in Mexico City, or he hit a big one to beat the Giants a couple years ago. But he's so steady, you know, not just with the field goals and extra points. You know, we all hold our breath. He's only missed one this year, so he's been so steady with all his kicks this year. And then his placement on the kickoffs is phenomenal. I mean, the Patriots have such an advantage. They don't just boot it out of the end zone every time and put the team on the 25. They make you earn those yards, and every time they stop you short of the 25, that's a win. You know, that's extra field position. And,
yeah.
And they do it. They have one of the lowest touchback rates in the NFL, and they have one of the best kick coverage, one of the best, you know, average starting field position. And, you know, all those little things add up to Bill Belichick, and you know they've crunched the numbers, and they understand the effect of that. So Gostkowski, his ability to place those kickoffs right around the goal line, sometimes in the corner, they run down, they cover it. That's a real underrated skill that a lot of kickers don't have. So, you know, he's going to miss a kick once in a while, and it might even be a big kick in the AFC Championship game like he did a couple years ago.
Is this ominous? Are you foreshadowing something
here? I hope not. I just jinxed the heck out of the Eagles yesterday. I wrote all about them, and then they lost. So I hope I'm not doing that to Steve. But he's phenomenal and, you know, not showing signs of slowing down. But, you know, if you want to talk about, like, Hall of Fame and things like that, like I'm saying, like, he's racking up a ton of points. But without that, like, seminal playoff Super Bowl-type moment, I think it's ultimately going to be difficult for him to crack that level of achievement.
Real quick one here before we go. Are the Patriots the class of the AFC, or is Pittsburgh right there with them? Have they? Yesterday was an ugly game, but they look like they're doing what they always do.
Yeah, they look much more well-rounded. I think the only competition's in the NFC right now. I mean, you still have to like the Eagles, and what the Vikings and Saints are doing is incredibly impressive, especially the Saints on their defense, but also their offense. And Alvin Kamara and Mark Ingram are phenomenal. But sorry, I'm not buying the Steelers. You got to prove it to me. And this is the same Mike Tomlin team and the same schemes on defense. And Ben looks disinterested at times this year. So not buying the Steelers. And even if the Steelers do win this game in Heinz Field, and there'll be a rematch most likely in the playoffs, they're not beating the Patriots twice. That ain't happening. So I really don't see any team. The two teams I'm nervous that I think on a random day could knock off the Patriots are the Jaguars and the Chargers. I think they have two excellent defenses, great pass rushers up front. They don't need to blitz. They can ruin Tom Brady's day in a hurry. They could catch you on a bad day. You know, they run the football, play defense. I buy those teams a lot more than I buy the Steelers.
This is Ben's way of saying he already booked his hotel in February in Minnesota.
Already booked. So already planning on a cold February in Minneapolis.
Yep, Super Bowl City right there. You can find Ben on Twitter. His handle is @BenVolen. Ben, thanks for coming on Season Ticket.
Thank you, Chad. Nice fill-in job today, backup quarterbacking here.
I appreciate that. I'm more Jimmy G than Brian Hoyer, I like to think. That's it for this edition of Season Ticket. If you've enjoyed the show, please tell a friend and leave us a review. I'm Chad Finn, in for Chris Gasper. We'll see you tomorrow.